I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, Westworld fans. Welcome to our virtual at-home edition of the Westworld After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We're, of course, talking about Westworld Season 3, Episode 5, Genre. I'm your host, Elena Jordan, and joining me is the entire lovely panel, Nate Miller in the house.
Hey, what's up, guys? Glad to be back.
Carrie Lane, so lovely to see you. Hair looking fresh, too.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. Happy Easter, everybody.
Alice Ford, hello, welcome.
Hello, hello. I don't have any ears, so I'll just give myself some ears. Happy Easter.
And a wave to everybody with this little guy here. Hey!
Yay!
Thanks for watching. Okay, so what did you guys think about this episode? Some overall thoughts before we dive in, dissect it. We're going to be talking about all of the main genres, of course, that were touched on, as well as saying goodbye to poor Martin Connell, and seeing how everything is playing out with Bernard and him, as well as Serac's backstory. We're also going to be giving you guys some cool news that Alice has for you guys at the end, as well as our predictions. So be sure to stick around for the whole show. Before I dive into the episode, Alice, what did you kind of think of this episode and how it stacks up to the other episodes this season?
You know, this was not my favorite episode. That's for sure. It jumped around a little bit too much for me, and it just wasn't my favorite. I did love that we got Serac's backstory. I liked learning a lot more about him and his brother and kind of how they developed, you know, the system. So that was really cool. We lost a couple of people in this episode as well. So there are parts that I liked, and I definitely liked the big car chases and some of the action scenes, but it definitely wasn't my favorite.
So even though it's Easter, you don't like the jumping around. Sorry.
Hopping.
Here's hopping. Nate, I'll like the next one.
Hey, I loved that. Now that both of us have made Nate sad. Nate, what did you think about the episode?
I will not let you rain on my parade. I actually thought this episode, I don't want to say really good, definitely not the best of the season. But I liked it. I definitely liked it more when I watched it the second time. There's a lot of plot progression that's going on. But yeah, I could have done without some of the choices that were made in this episode for sure.
Any specifics, or do you want to wait and dive into
it? I'll let you drag it out and I'll let you drag the show and I will be the defender.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Carrie Lane, what do you think? Which are you going to be the helping Nate defend today?
I'll be the happy medium. I don't think it was my favorite, but I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing, that it wasn't my favorite. I think it was kind of cool though, to change the tone of how they're telling the story, because that's always, even if you don't like how it's told, I do find it refreshing when a show's like, here, let's change the perspective of and how we're giving you the story and the backstory. So I did appreciate that. So I was more middle ground. Like, it was cool and I'm still here. It's definitely not enough that would make me go, I'm done. But it's like, all right, can we get to the next one now?
I'll give you that. And, you know, considering it is kind of the midpoint in the season, this seems like this was a good one if the director just really wanted to show off some cool visual stuff and because I feel like the reason this one felt like it dragged, even though it had the most action objectively speaking with like the car chases and the explosions, was because it was just so expository. It was so exposition heavy. So I think having those kind of moments, the explosions and the different things, the fights and sequences, it kind of broke up that and made it feel not so monotonous, but still gave us enough backstory and put us at the place where we need to be. So now next week's anti-penultimate, then the penultimate, then the final episode. There's only three left. That's crazy. Yeah,
exactly. Like, and that's why I don't have as much of an issue with this episode as I did initially, because looking at the pacing of this season, there's been so much character development already and like so much establishing of things that, you know, stuff had to start popping off this episode. And there was a lot to cover. And I think doing the car chase scene with the genre effect, even though it was kind of cheesy and felt out of place in some spots, it was a way to make something interesting that may not have really been that interesting and move the plot forward kind of at the same time. So I appreciated it in that regard.
And I like that we had a lot of moments that made us go. That was literally just so I could get rid of the hat. But
no, that's okay. Actually,
that Nate, that's your present. That's your Easter gift from
Yay.
Me.
We do have a live chat. Hello, everybody in the live chat. Davey Elmer says best episode of the series so far. But David Baldwin says a little slow, not the best. So a little bit in between. Thank you, chat.
I felt like there were some really interesting moments this episode. So let's go ahead and just dive into it. One of the big moments, of course, was saying goodbye to Connell's Dolores, the Martin Connell's version of Dolores who sacrifices themselves. What did you think about this whole thing? I mean, and having Ashley come back and kind of defend Bernard, this kind of whole storyline that they had, it felt like it was basically just to be, to me, a little philosophical injection too. And it's like, you've always been of two minds. It's not that binary. It just felt like it cut to it to say something like one-liners that were really dramatic and then cut back. But what did you think, Alice?
Yeah, I liked this part. I mean, I liked that Ashley came back. I had kind of forgotten about him when he went over the balcony.
What episode?
Like, oh, he's back.
What episode? You forget about him.
I know. Sorry. But it was nice to see him again. And I did like that Bernard, I mean, he tells Martin, he goes, living another life changes you. And I think that just like such a pivotal thing, like going back through the first season, it's like, you can't pretend to be somebody else. Eventually it gets to you. And obviously like that little seed was already like, it planted a seed that started to erode like his, you know, following of Dolores, I think. So I think it made sense that he kind of sabotaged at the end. I mean, even though that's probably what Dolores wanted anyways, but he did seem like he was on their side at the end of that. So
what did you think, Nate?
I think they're all on the same side. I think just like Bernard says at the end, I think he realizes that I'm part of Dolores's plan, and I have a prediction for that later, which we can get into. But I was happy to see Stubbs back. I liked the interaction between Martin and Bernard, because I mean essentially it's Dolores and Bernard, even though it's in Martin's body. And we've seen them kind of be at odds, and even in this case they're kind of at odds, kind of working together. And this is, again, this is one of those sequences that seems kind of not that important, but I think after the end of the season, when we go back and rewatch this episode, the interactions that happen between Martin and Bernard, I think are very important into leading to what the end game is. So I thought it was really cool. I like the whole Rehoboam stuff is interesting. So seeing like the node, and I'm wondering if that is, they haven't really overtly said it. It's implied that like that is the machine, but I feel like it wouldn't make sense for it just to be one, especially for the whole world and to be that unsecured. Right. So when they say wordage like node, I'm thinking that there's other ones. So this is just one that they were at. But it's really interesting to see that, and the way their whole interface was set up and stuff, that was cool. And you know, Bernard's line of like, well, Martin says, you know, we're going to show them the rails, which I thought was really interesting. And then Bernard says, oh, she's sending them off their loops in like host language, which is something that we've already talked about of like things that they've inferred with Caleb. But it's just cool to see them reinforce this again, because I know some viewers take them a few times.
I like too that you point out the showing them the rails, you know, they've been on the same train, because they really drive that train metaphor home, because while they're saying that, they cut to Dolores literally on a train wreaking havoc. And then, you know, then we actually hear them when they step off, you hear the voice in the background that says, this train has reached its final destination. And it's like, yeah, it really has. Like now this is the moment that has been released. So I did like that metaphor. We see kind of the literal metaphors later too with Serac and the flies. And we'll talk more about that too. Yep. But this one was, it was very metaphor heavy. What did you guys think about specifically when he was saying that, when Bernard was talking to Connell's and saying, do you want to die on her sword? You know, it's not just me. They're going to come for you. Maybe you don't want to die on her sword. And this idea of, do you really want to just play this role? because Carrie, I think you had brought up before last week, I was wondering
if this scene would be a nod towards the other copies rebelling against the Prime One, because Bernard asks, like, have you ever questioned what your actions are and what you're being told to do? And it looked like McConnell had a moment of like contemplation. So I'm wondering if that might inform Bernard that the others ones, that he might be able to dissuade them and make them do something else.
I did really like, too, when we see Bernard before he sends Connells on his way, he takes the device, too. So it's like he's in control of his own destiny when everybody else is getting their actual control of their own destiny sent to their pads. Bernard takes his. So I liked that kind of little visual connection as well. Nate, were you going
to
say something?
Yeah, I just think it's really important to point out also that Colin says to Bernard, like, you're the only one that we can't replace. Which I think is something that's going to end up being very important. So again, this is I'm firmly in the Bernard is part of Dolores's plan camp, even though he doesn't know it yet. So I'm curious to see how that's going to end up panning out.
I think we might have the same prediction, Nate.
Maybe.
Question then for you both, which maybe you can tie in later to predictions. You know those stories where someone has to make the decision on their own and they can't be informed by the other parties? I wonder if this is a case for Bernard that he is part of Dolores's plan, but he has to make that choice on his own and not have her directly push him there as firmly.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely mirror, you know, the just like season one with Arnold, or I'm sorry, with Ford and Dolores, and him having a plan that ultimately culminates in her making a choice. He's just kind of assuming what that choice is going to be based on his information. So I would assume that it's a similar thing with Bernard, of where she's giving him a choice, but she's kind of guiding him in a certain direction so that he sees certain things. So when he gets to making that choice, he makes the choice that she wants him to make. That's what I think the plan is.
Now, any of the hosts, like, if there has been a, like, prediction of their futures from the node, or is it all just now random because they've gone past what they were programmed to do?
Dolores points out later when we see the glasses, when she's like, you know, read me, when she's talking to Liam, she's not in the system at all. But we're assuming that's because she's wiped that in the system. So my personal belief is that this system, Rehoboam, has predicted every outcome of all of her choices and potentially all of Bernard's. And I think that you guys are right. I think she's onto something, and that Bernard is, if he makes that choice, then something happens. If she forces that choice, then a different outcome, presumably a worse outcome, happens.
The inference that I got was that Rehoboam doesn't really have information on the hosts like it does on the humans. So it has their whole life, their jobs, their current situations. I would imagine it'd be a lot harder for them to run the whole simulation prediction thing without the proper data sets.
Something I definitely did not predict was getting to see Martell again. Just to have my heart shattered immediately when she was blown to bits. What did you guys think of saying goodbye to both Connells and Martell in this very, what felt like, ironically, it made me think very much of Avengers with a big explosion in the building. And I was like, aw, everyone around you dies in explosions in every movie that you're in. What did you guys think about this scene and saying goodbye before we dive into Serac's whole backstory? Do you think it's just time?
It was one of those, it makes sense in terms of, you know, self-destruct and take out more in one blow and is more of a statement. It was just unfortunate. I'm like, aw. But what can you do?
Yeah, I think we got a lot of good scenes out of him. I would have loved to have him around longer just because I love his accent. But the first thing this reminded me of was Angela in the cradle and blowing herself up. And that, you know, when you have a bunch of robots who don't, mm-hmm. you know, really feel, even if they can process thoughts and whatever, that's a whole separate discussion. They don't really feel pain. So the idea of kamikazing for their cause is not as tough of a choice as it is for us, I guess. I'm really curious if, what's her name? Mantis lived.
Martell.
Yeah.
No, she got.
I mean, but we didn't see it.
Yeah, we did because we saw Serac see her dissipate.
Oh, yeah.
Because he had the, yeah, oh, she got, right. that's right. what I was saying, Avenger style. It's like,
yeah,
whether you're guardian or not, like everybody around you is going to get blown up.
Baby. Unless she's a host.
She's or it's not real, which I'm going to
it's a simulation.
Talk about a theory later.
A simulation and a simulation. It's all in a snow globe. So
it was interesting though to see that move happen where we've in this whole episode though we've seen Serac just in the plane kind of just like watching things happen, kind of playing the puppet master, and then you know for him that situation literally blew up in his face and like he, it's outside of his control. That was cool. Good imagery.
Literal metaphors, loving it. Talk about Serac too. This was a very Serac heavy episode. We got so much backstory. We'd already known that Paris had been destroyed. We found that out when he had his dinner with Maeve, but we didn't get all of this backstory about him wanting to control everything all the way down to his brother. Kind of talking about the really literal metaphors was he was talking about, you know, there are always things you can't predict. There's always these outliers, these problems. He really drove that home, I think, three different times. But at the beginning says, you know, there are flies in the ointment. And then we show him meeting with a president that he got elected to basically be a puppet. And then we see the fly buzzing around the whole time until he finally swats it. What did you guys think about this intro before the episode even started, with it being this kind of intro to Serac now with a little bit of his backstory as well? And how do you think that this tied in having all of that exposition? What did you think, Carrie?
I really appreciated having his backstory because he's this kind of mysterious figure that we don't really know anything about. And it gave it a little more personal touch. Like he didn't seem like the murderous type early on. And to see the brutality that he goes to preserve order is like, whoa. But at the same time, not surprising because he's trying to preserve that order. And it was interesting of his mind not essentially understanding or tolerating people that are on the fringes, they're outside of that control. And even his own brother that he's willing to manipulate and control. So I appreciated seeing more context to his character.
Yeah, I did too. I liked that we got to see his backstory and, you know, his really like rise to where he is and his relationship with Liam too and Dempsey. I liked kind of learning that whole, how it's all intertwined. Learning that his brother was an outlier was certainly interesting. It's interesting also because Caleb is an outlier and obviously other characters are too. So I'm sure that those will intertwine in some way as well as we get into the next couple of episodes. But yeah, I think it was really important to have that backstory. And I'm glad that we got to see like the node and how it was built and how he really built this whole system and how it's related to Delos and everything. So
yeah, I think getting his motivation for why he built it is very important. To me, this whole thing just read as a supervillain backstory. It seems like they're really setting him up to be the villain of this season, which I think further cements the idea that Dolores is now like some type of anti-hero, which will make the confrontation between her and Maeve very interesting, to say the least, I'm sure. But yeah, it seems firmly supplanted after this episode that he is the bad guy. Even though, you know, in his mind he wants good for all people, as you know all good supervillains do, like Doctor Doom, in the end he's willing to do some terrible things for it, and in the end it's not even really helping humanity as much as he thinks it is. So yeah, it was really cool to see kind of his perspective and his implication into the system, like you said, how they created it, the idea of like wanting to make a god, and then obviously the very important trauma of him and his brother becoming an outlier, something he can't predict. I thought it was really interesting him mentioning, you know, he built this facility, which Collins actually mentions to Bernard as well. So I think this facility is definitely going to come into play. And they're trying to like change people, reprogram people from being outliers so that they can fit into the system. So I think that's definitely going to be very important leading up into the climax. Yeah, but also I just wanted to point out he's speaking like he's recording these memories, and he refers to Rehoboam as like the person he's talking to. So I think that's really interesting beyond just like Dolores getting that information and them talking at the end. But like he recorded this information specifically for Rehoboam. So is it even real? Maybe, I don't know. That might be a long shot, but yeah, very, very interesting setup. A lot of information on a character that we really knew nothing about before. And I think it was well executed.
I did really like too that the visual kind of mirroring of him editing his brother and trying to edit people showed it almost was the same setup that they had when they were trying to put the host mind into a physical body, the kind of live forever mm-hmm. type thing that we already saw doesn't work. It just makes you go crazy. So we see like the woman sobbing, we see kind of these people in different states of kind of mental breakdown, and even talking about, you know, the anti-radiation drug that they were given to alter the genetic breakdown that they would have, not realizing that in trying to fix this genetic breakdown, he's creating a mental breakdown. So I thought that was really, really interesting. I really, really liked his setup of, you know, we knew he was a villain as soon as he basically said that there are people that are just written off. And that's when we, because Dolores has basically said people are, especially, you know, her eat the rich mentality, we do horrible things to these people, but they've set it up for themselves. Whereas he's saying we're taking the choice away entirely. What did you guys think about this when he mentions too, where he's saying helping them is better than killing them off? When it's even pointed, you know, you're not helping them, you're changing them. But he says, well, the ones that are basically deemed unworthy completely, we send off to war to fight for those of us here. How do you think that is going to tie in with Caleb? Because we've seen these kind of jolting back and forth, like flashbacks in him, and just that one little line felt very deliberate. What did you think, Alice?
Well, I think that probably obviously happened to Caleb. And I mean, we're going to get into Caleb more, I think, in a minute. But, you know, throughout this episode, Caleb keeps having these flashbacks and like fading memories of things that he didn't realize he had done. And while he may be thinking it's the drugs, I think it's pretty obviously that he did those things, that he obviously killed, took hostages. He may have killed his best friend. He obviously did something to one of Liam's people. So yeah, and it obviously had his memory wiped somehow. So maybe he was in that facility before, and when he gets back there in an upcoming episode, he's going to remember it all.
Do you think that there's going to be any sort of like altered memory thing kind of tied in, Nate?
Yes.
Then just leaving it at that. There we go.
I'll save the rest for predictions. Before we get off Soracta, I do want to say that I feel like an idiot when he said the line where he's talking about balance, and he says the sun and the moon align, we made order out of chaos, and then it cuts to the Rehoboam thing, and it's like, oh, it's an eclipse.
It's the eclipse. Duh. The divergence.
It's so stupid. Like, how it's so obvious. And at the end, how like it's like further separated, like, oh man, that's such a cool image to show, like, you know, chaos and order or whatever. Genius.
What did you think too, because his watch also showed the divergence mm-hmm. moving in like a clockwise direction as well as separating too, so it seemed like it was counting down to this inevitable moment. What did you guys think about that?
Well, he mentioned how with all the predictions, there were the consistent scenarios where things would go wrong. And it's interesting because it parallels the humans and the hosts from before, that even if you think you're controlling everybody, there's going to be people, all kinds of people, a host included, that will fall out of that, and you can't predict what they'll do. And I wonder if some of these people, now knowing how much they're being controlled, if then they would almost go against what would be typical for them and make different kind of choices. Like, how does that affect your decision making when you know somebody's been watching over your shoulder?
It's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, also there was that one line that Sirach tells Dempsey when he's about to kill him, and basically says that there's always moments where like the prediction can't predict, and there's a fleeting moment where you can make a decision and you may not, but there is that moment there, and that's the thing that we can't predict.
The white space.
Yeah, the white space.
That
ooh, which is space. On the watch face.
Yeah. What did you guys think about this too? With him killing Dempsey, to me, it was like, okay, but you imprisoned your brother because he was going to kill Dempsey, and then you killed Dempsey. Did you not see that happening, buddy?
That's not really why he imprisoned his brother, though.
Well, because he was unpredictable.
Right. That was just an excuse. That was just a way for him to get into Dempsey's mind. At least that's how I read it. Like, I don't think he was ever concerned about that. He was just concerned because he was an outlier. And because, you know, I think the inference I got is that his brother is really the genius that built it. Mm-hmm. And he just was kind of there. And as many geniuses are, it comes with some being the owner and operator of the program. He went, this is not going to work looking long term with the simulations. So he had to get rid of his brother after trying to fix it.
Man, that was brutal. And he kept getting poking his nose where it shouldn't belong, where he even has a line, his curiosity got the better of him. And so I think it was one of those, maybe he didn't necessarily want to kill him like that, but he's like, well, we just kind of got to get rid of you. And oh, how convenient, your plane's crashed. And I'm like, does he drag the body into plane. The fire then? Yeah.
I know. I was like, you dumbass, run. Like, can you really yes. not put this together at this point? Like, I was like, okay. Whatever. You're an idiot at this point.
But also, why wouldn't he have just put him on the plane and then crashed the plane? So
he didn't. Because he could have survived. And he also wanted to have this big dramatic moment and be like, you want to stick your nose in my business? I want to stick your nose in your plane, buddy.
Because he's a supervillain. So he has to be dramatic. Yeah.
He has to reveal his evil plan before smacking his head. And
exactly. Oh, the villain monologue.
I do have to say, though, just the phrase, a bubble of agency, I loved. And as the phrase describing, like, the small period of time that you have to actually take control of your life and make certain choices. And if that doesn't become a band name at some point, I will be very disappointed. But any last thoughts on Sirach before we dive into the big storyline, Caleb and his various genres? Ready to dive in?
Yes.
After you.
Yeah. We have this whole thing with Sirach, you know, being told that Sirach is trying to outbid on Delos. Liam, you know, we put you in this corner and now we're taking you, blah, 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 whatever. But this basically boils down to where we have Liam inject Caleb when he's trying to get away with this party drug genre, which we've seen kind of in various forms and in little pieces throughout different episodes. But what did you guys think specifically about this genre switching throughout the episode? Because some people, this seemed to be one that really tore fans one direction or the other. You either loved it or you kind of hated it.
I liked on the, if you haven't watched it yet, I do recommend for people watching this, watch the behind the scenes after, because they did talk about that they wanted to explore the other genres and this was an easy way to do that. And so I thought that was really interesting of like, hey, how can we get into that? We've already established it. I thought it was interesting, like an intriguing way to make the show style and tone change and through the eyes of this character and how maybe tap into feelings he didn't quite know were there. But I could see maybe some people it throwing them for a loop. I thought it was pretty cool, though. It was kind of interesting, though. Some of the genres were a little less defined, so I was a little I would have wanted maybe more defined on the horror. I kind of got more like the detective noir style and romantic and action movie. And that's, and yeah, romantic. That's like it.
I did really, really like, though, when we see Marshall Lynch's character come back and he's talking about genre and he's like, oh, yeah, man, like you get 5 or 6 different movies at once. This is like the ultimate drip. Watch out for that last one, though. That one's the kicker. And then when he asks about it, he's like, it's reality, man.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, all of this was just a setup for that one line, and I'll give it to you because it was a good line. But Nate, what did you have a favorite? Because I know in particular, the music was pretty cool. And I really liked the arrangements that they had of some of these different ones. But did you have any in particular that really stood out for you?
Yeah. I mean, the nightclubbing, that E-pop song, fantastic song in the subway sequence was my favorite of that for sure. I just want to say, like, if it was up to me, I would not have done this for sure. Maybe I'm just fanboying out and super being defensive here, but I thought it was an okay choice. I think the drug and the neural drug, I think, is an important plot device. So I think there's more to it than just the genre thing that will become more apparent. I think, like I said earlier, there was a lot of plot that was covered within that time, which essentially was just them walking Liam from the cave to the beach. And it really wouldn't have been that, like, the car chase is kind of cool, but I think it was made a lot more interesting because of the drug trip stuff. You know, seeing the sequences in the trailer of him shooting the gun and the car flipping and stuff, it's like, oh, okay, cool, there's like an action sequence. But him being in like full-on war movie mode and Flight of the Valkyries is playing and he's got the big gun, and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And like you said, it's nice to have a little bit of a change of the same, especially in season 3. And my last defense is that it was such a small portion of the episode in terms of things that actually happened that I was okay with it. In the halfway point, I was like, all right, what's going on? This is the episode we're following the last one with. But then as more things got revealed and we got to the end, like I said, after the second rewatch, I was much more okay with it than the first time I saw it. But yeah, I definitely understand why people were really jarred.
I gotta be honest, the reason that it felt odd to me was because it was such a small part of it. Like, it was such a big part of Caleb's storyline, but it felt like the director had initially gone in and said, okay, the whole episode is going to be filtered through. So each time we see everything, we'll see a little bit of reality, but then this genre. And then the producer's like, no, you can do like this much of the episode. And he's like, I'll take what I can get. You know, it felt slightly forced to me, just because I felt like they didn't lean into it enough if they were going to do it. Like, yeah, I felt like totally it should have been with more. You
because that's exactly what I was going to say too. Like, it wasn't enough. Like, if they're going to get into like Caleb's POV, he needed to be like more screwed up, and like they needed to like stay with it longer, because a lot of the times that they would go to his POV, it didn't really seem like he was that messed up. So it's like they should have just gone for it if they were going to go for it, which is why I think I didn't really like it that much, is because it wasn't like, it's not, they didn't like fully commit to like being in his shoes for those like hallucinates. I can't even say that word.
Hallucination. I was like, hallucinogens, and I was like, that's just what you take for the hallucination.
Well, yeah. I have a question. Did you all think it was cheesy? We got Phil Acoustic Chaos in the chat said, I didn't like it, I thought it was cheesy.
I
thought it was kind of cheesy in some spots, but I feel like it was intentionally cheesy for the genre part for those things. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen them, but when they were doing the promo for the season, they released the main trailer, and then they released a bunch of like secret trailers it was essentially the same footage from the original trailer, but re-edited in different ways, actually to target them towards different genres. So there was one that was like a more action-oriented one. There was one that was like a romantic comedy one. And then there was one I forget what the other one was, but this remind, as soon as he started hitting the genre things, I was like, oh, now I understand why they did those promos, because those shots of where he's looking at Dolores, yeah, like longingly, it's romantically, because like, those are in like the romance trailers, and I'm like, what, in what scene does this shot this season? But this is obviously where it comes from.
Yeah, well,
Lindy, but I'm gonna get weird here. Do you think there's a do you think there's then a mirror world of each of those genres? Because why would they spend so much time making genre specific trailers if it was only in this really one episode?
I think it's going to have something to do with the drugs and the implants and how that affects how you see reality. I think the overall message from this, and I think that's part of the reason why it wasn't so like I can't talk. I think that's why it didn't like disable him, why he was still able to do stuff. He was just kind of tripping about what was going on while he was doing stuff, is because it's more about being able to edit your reality and your view of reality to kind of control you, as opposed to literally like changing things and like metamorphing things. And
yeah. Okay. Like, that's a good
this
point.
Is about changing the filter. Right. Kind it's like the, of, it's how like you the, filter it's things.
Like the railroad kind of a thing. Like you're projecting things to push you in a certain direction. I think that that's what this is a lead in to for.
And to kind of show how disorienting it is when somebody else has control of that filter, when you're not in control of your own filter, it is disorienting and it feels weird, where Dolores is saying, I'm not the bad guy. I'm trying to get rid of the filter completely. I'm not trying to put the best filter on you. I'm trying to get rid of it so that you get to decide. So I did like that, but it did feel, I don't know, that I wish that they would have leaned a little bit more into it, because it did kind of feel like the director was like, see, look how cool I can do all these different things in like really cool style. So just here's a little poo-poo platter of what I can do. Like, here's a little homage to some of my favorites. And like on a show like Community, it works. But for this, it just like, I don't know. It felt like, I was like, is this like Abed's episode of Westworld? Why are we seeing so many different things? I don't know. But ultimately, we do see Dolores kind of talking about how she's, her plan to open their cages. And this whole idea of hope. Like, we have Caleb's whole thing about, you know, the rats, and, you know, that's actually a scientific study that's been done about, like, if rats are left to drown, then they'll drown in X amount of time. But if researchers would rescue them and then put them back in, they would just swim until they died of exhaustion, because they had the hope of somebody helped them once, they can help them again. So this is kind of a modified, I know, psychology researchers, man, messed up. But this was kind of a, like a modified version of that story. And what did you think of this idea of when Liam says hope is what our entire society is built on, and Caleb says false, I would rather live in chaos than a world controlled by you? Because well, that he seems says
false
like
hope.
False hope, right?
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about this? Like, it seems like at this point, he's fully on board with Dolores. I mean, Dolores literally stands in front of bullets that are coming towards him to save him.
I think he's on board, but he definitely has a lot more questions, because now he's witnessed her get shot and be okay. And he noticed, and that's when she zips up the jacket and is like, it's all right, we'll talk about that later. So I think he's a bit, maybe more intrigued to want to know what's going on. And I think he's okay with this kind of new chaos, but he wants to know more about what's really going on with him, because clearly something has been altered.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me, because I mean, I disagree, I guess, with that line of thinking. I mean, our society does run on the hope that you will be successful, or, you know, graduate college, or like whatever it is, have a family. So like, yeah, it's like chaos isn't the answer. And like, if you're going to go to a system of chaos, then it will just be chaos constantly. No one will ever choose to not be in chaos, because they know that the outcome is going to be horrible. So why even try? So I don't know.
I feel like it is interesting, though, because part of his rationale is like, well, why even try if the system is rigged? If the game is rigged, if you think like we have this hope, but it is a false hope, it's already been dictated for you what you are allowed to accomplish. Because when we see first Ash's brother, the James Harrison, that he's going to, you know, die a violent death in 5 to 8 years and had, you know, the low occupational score and everything. And then we see all of these people, the guy who, Terrence Danvers, who his friends all think he's an asshole and describe him as, you know, unreliable. And then the really sad one, the one that made me want to cry, was the Maria Davis, the little girl who apparently was going to commit suicide by slitting her own wrists in 5 to 8 years. And they could already determine that. I mean, that was a kind of chaos, but I think that, what do you guys think of this idea of showing it could potentially break that loop, can set them on a totally different path that may be chaotic? We see everybody initially fighting and breaking windows and the teenagers and everything, but we're not seeing the long term of it, of, okay, well then maybe that little girl could go on to live because she learns that that was a predicted thing for her. I don't know. What did you think, Nate?
Well,
Carrie?
The question would be, is if you self-sabotage, if you know that that's what you're going to do, or do you make it a self-fulfilling prophecy thinking that's what you're only going to do, or do you change it? But that's like the idea that when you tell a child something consistently, then they start to believe it. Or adults too, if you keep saying like, oh, you're dumb, or you're this, or you're that, and you just keep thinking it, then you almost make it happen. But I wonder if some of the people seeing this potential that they are going to have will make them go, no, I don't want that, and make it completely 180, or they'll just succumb to it and give up.
Yeah, I mean, we see that with Ash. Ash shoots. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it definitely changed things. Anytime you have a simulation that's, you know, based on probabilities and data, when the data set changes, the variables change, the outcome is going to change, right? So, yeah, I mean, for the people, yes, some of them hopefully will do better, some of them will succumb. I think the larger scope here, what really matters more, is this is this is the major step in Dolores's plan. Before, everything else has been kind of pre-planning up to this point. This is the bomb dropping on humanity. She just, like, you know, excuse my language, fucked everything up, because insight in these systems run the whole world. So now you'll have people, you know, going out of their loops, to quote Bernard. And just, you know, just one or two anomalies was tough for the system and created this drop off. This type of massive change of telling people where they're going to go, and suddenly, you know, that variance of information of them knowing is going to change a lot of people's decision, which is going to throw the whole simulation system for a loop. So that's kind of her whole plan. That's why I thought that whole sequence was cool, outside of the implications of telling everyone in the world what a simulation thinks is going to happen in the end of their life. But also the, you know, this is one of the reasons why the genre thing was kind of cool, because having them walk through the town and the chase and all this stuff that happens, and you see kind of society get set up, they go underground, drop the bomb. When they come back up, it's like they're in, you know, Walking Dead land. Like, people are just doing whatever they want, full on post-apocalypse, things are on fire, people are smashing cars. And it's like a massive world perspective has changed because of what's happened.
The right information at the right time is deadlier than any weapon in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now we only have a few minutes here. So any last thoughts on Caleb? I mean, when we finally see him, he literally has blood on his hands as he's taking this bag that he doesn't even know what it is to go blindly follow Dolores. Any last thoughts in the episode before we dive into some of our predictions?
I just want to shout out to the bike. You're a real one.
Yes.
Hoping that bike on fire at the end was the bike and it still survived. Right. If not, RIP bike.
It's another episode where we killed a robot, essentially.
Aww.
Well, I mean, Martin died, so.
Yeah.
Well, that too.
Also a host.
Also a named host.
Well, we do have some predictions. Before we dive into those, though, Alice, you had a little bit of news as well, right?
I did have a little bit of news. And, oh, yes. My first bit of news is that, if you guys want to check it out, Thandi Newton actually had to do some ADR for an unknown upcoming episode in her car this past week, because obviously she is also staying at home right now. So if you go on the Daily Mail, you can actually check out a couple of videos and photos of her recording on her cell phone, which is very unlike a normal TV production. So that's kind
from
of
from ADR to AD car.
That's right. Sorry. And
that was just for Nate.
I was reading this really cool theory today about the mirror world. If you guys are into theories, I highly recommend checking it out. There are a lot of really great things in here that show you that a lot of the scenes that have been in the last couple of episodes, there's actually been two of them. So like in Charlotte Hale's speech that she records on that iPad that we see from Westworld in episodes 1 and 2, there were actually two versions of that, where she says something a little bit differently in each. And then there's a couple other things, like when Bernard in episode 1 is looking at that cow that has the snare, in one of the scenes it has a snare, and then when we look back it doesn't. So the theory basically is that basically this whole season so far we're seeing a mirror world. So like we're seeing some things happen one way and some things happen another way, but they're very like slight, so you may not even realize they're happening. So we'll see.
So that cow was neither sneer nor there. Sorry. Try to make a snare joke. Didn't really work. Anyway, predictions. We got them. AfterBuzz TV predictions. I have a feeling that Nate and I might have a similar prediction. Do you want me to say what it is first? Okay. I think that Bernard has been altered, and the ultimate pearl that has all of the information from Westworld that was stolen, that they believe is in the mind of Dolores, is actually in Bernard's mind. And that it's encrypted in there, and that Dolores has also given a piece of herself by giving a piece of that into Bernard's coding that he cannot access. But now that he has the little clicker device and now has full autonomy of himself, now we'll be able to discover that he has that option within him. Nate, is that what you were thinking?
Agreed. Yeah, that's not the prediction I was going to make, but that's something I was thinking about today. Yeah, especially thinking back to Abernathy and him going crazy, having all that data in his mind. You think like, well, regular host then can't do it, but what if it's a special host that's like a hybrid host? Who do we know like that? So yeah, I think that makes sense.
I think there may even be fragments of it, because it may be too much for one, so there may be pieces that are broken up.
Yeah,
potentially.
I'll do my next. My prediction was going to be that I think Caleb, I don't think he's a host. I think they're kind of inferring that there is something off with him, for sure, something we don't know about. I think maybe he was reprogrammed. I think he was sent to one of these centers and has kind of like this whole life that he doesn't remember, or experiences he doesn't remember. I'm not sure how far down that's gonna go. I think like the implications we got of his mom not knowing who he was means it could be very, very drastic changes. But I don't know. I think we'll kind of see with that. I think that's what they're leading towards. There's just a lot of questions with him, like the end of the episode.
I think you're
like,
right.
You did it. Who do you think I am? And I'm like, who do you, what? What?
I will say, and I want to hear your ladies' predictions as well. But I do think too, because we see a little bit of the next week on, if you haven't seen it, then little spoiler for the teaser. I don't know what's going to happen other than the teaser, but we see the man in black getting strapped down. Like he's going to be reprogrammed and fighting back. I think that's when we're going to find out how they use the drip and everything to actually manipulate and reprogram. So Caleb is an entirely different person who was an assassin or something, and then couldn't deal with it. But what do you think, Carrie Lane?
Yeah, I think Caleb killed his friend by, I don't know why per se, but they talked earlier, they take those people and send them to war. So I wonder if his friend was somebody whoever they is, wants to get rid of and use Caleb to do that, and then wiped his memory and had him like start over, or he's maybe done this multiple times. Hard to say. I do still think the Charlotte Dolores will betray the other Doloreses and break away from that kind of programming and because so far she seems to be the one that's not as grounded in her new self. So I'm curious, and I almost kind of want her to, because that'd be a little more exciting than they all just follow the lead.
Hell no. Sorry. Alice?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Nate, I agree with you too. I definitely think that, because I was thinking Caleb could maybe be like, I was like, he's not a host, but like he's been rebuilt somehow, reprogrammed, or like something's been, yeah, I don't know. Something's off with him. He definitely had something to do with that facility. So I definitely agree with you guys on that front. We haven't mentioned Maeve, who we're definitely going to see in the next episode, I think. But I think definitely her mind control is going to come into play somehow with either stopping what's going on or helping Dolores in the end, maybe.
Because she's amazing. Well, thank you guys all for tuning in. On that note, a little present for Nate. We love hearing from you guys, so we want to hear all of your predictions, so be sure to leave them in the comments below, and be sure to tweet us, reach out to us on social media. Guys, if they want to reach out to you, where can everybody find you? Nate Miller?
You can find me everywhere at Dog Like Nate.
Miss Carrie Lane?
Yes, you can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E.
And where can we find you, Alice Ford?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Alice L. Ford or on Instagram at Alice's Adventures on Earth.
And you guys can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan and on Instagram at Elena J. Jordan. And you can find all of us here next week here on AfterBuzz TV's Westworld After Show. See you guys next time.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV.